Today on the Dominic Inyart Show, the abortion bill we've been discussing officially passed into law yesterday. In Maryland, there's a proposed law which says that babies could be killed 28 days after birth. That and Elon Musk is now the largest shareholder in Twitter. We're talking about all of that and more right here on the Dominic Inyart Show. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to the Dominic Inyart Show. Some sad news today. The abortion bill, which we've been discussing over the past few weeks, it officially passed into law yesterday. It had been sitting on Jared Polis' desk for a while. And of course, we all knew that it would pass. He's by no means a bastion of conservative morality. But it was enacted yesterday, which is really heartbreaking. This is the most radical bill, perhaps, in American history. It denies children in the womb any sort of rights. And more egregiously, it argues by implication that the government has the ability to give and take away rights from whoever they choose, whenever they choose. And it is scary, it's sad, it's heartbreaking that this bill is so explicit, claiming the government has such power that it does not have. That power is only with God. And that leads us into the next bill, which I want to briefly discuss. Reading now from LifeSite News, babies could be killed 28 days after birth under proposed Maryland law, attorney warns. And so, reading now, Maryland legislation proposed in the Maryland Senate would allow babies to be left to die for as long as the first 28 days after birth, according to the analysis from a pro-life attorney. Senate Bill 669 is also known as the Pregnant Persons Freedom Act of 2022. By the way, you notice how they like to say pregnant person or pregnant individual, and they don't just say mom or, you know, woman. And it's so egregious that they want to defend so-called women's rights, but they go out of their way to not use the term woman. And that's because they don't even know what a woman is. Anyways, continuing, but the problems go beyond the use of person in place of the accurate references to women having babies. The bill also proposes a revision to the fetal manslaughter statute that would serve to handcuff the investigation of infant deaths unrelated to abortion. This is because the legislation prohibits investigations and criminal prosecutions for women and medical professionals for a, quote, failure to act in relation to a, quote, perinatal death. In other words, a baby that is born alive and well could be abandoned and left to starve or freeze to death, and nothing could be done to punish those who participated in that cruel death. The language used is unclear, so the law could be interpreted to prevent investigation into the death of infants at least 7 days after birth and may extend to infants as old as 4 weeks old. So, in summary, SB 669, it might as well be SB 666 with how evil this bill is. It says the government is not allowed to investigate manslaughter cases with perinatal infants. But the bill doesn't define perinatal, so the bill it's very intentionally vague, and it's one of those bills that probably won't be used initially, but it was written in a way to later be stretched and manipulated to protect infanticide and, you know, the murder of children outside the womb, you know, for up to a month after birth. And similar to how in Colorado, there was a law passed several years back, which technically, though I don't recall which law it is, but technically it makes the Bible criminal to distribute the Bible because it says you can't spread any literature that has hate speech, and what the Bible has would be considered hate speech. And so they don't enforce it right off the bat, but, you know, give it a few years until they can find maybe a more crazy Alex Jones type individual who they want to throw the book at him, and they might accuse him of breaking the law that says you can't have any literature that spreads hate speech. Oh, look, hey, you have the Bible. And so, you know, we're going to throw the book at you and then start to enforce it that way. And so it's not always with these attacks. They're very cunning and sneaky with how they want to, you know, have these legal attacks. And so I believe it's probably similar with this, where it's not so blunt that, you know, oh, hey, we're going to, you know, start with infanticide tomorrow. But it's made that, you know, down the line, it can be twisted and stretched, and when its origin has been forgotten, it can be, you know, manipulated. And if you go read the bill yourself, you'll notice how it doesn't come out and say any of that explicitly, right? It's very wordy. And that's because, well, A, all of our laws are extremely confusing, and, you know, confusing laws are a result of an evil government. When you have a righteous government, the laws are simple and easy to understand, so simple that a child could understand them. And to illustrate this point, I'm going to Google this right now live. How many laws are there in America? And let's see. Okay, as of August 15th, 2017, let's see, this says that there have been 88,899 federal rules and regulations since 1995. So this isn't even all of them, but since 1995, there have been 88,899 federal, and that's not even state, that's just federal. I'm not going to look too much into that, but so almost 90,000 federal laws since 1995, and it's absolutely absurd. It's insane. And we have lawyers, get this, we have lawyers who their entire job is to understand the most specific and niche areas of the law. You can go to school for years, get a college degree, and devote your entire life to becoming a lawyer just to understand the complex nuances of suing a coffee shop for making your mocha slightly too hot. It's so complex and confusing. There's a need for people like that to understand the most obscure and arbitrary and ridiculous laws. And, you know, compare that to the simplicity of what the Bible says about the law, right? It's, you know, Galatians 5:14 says, "For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So get that? You get that? That love your neighbor as yourself is the fulfillment of the entire law. That is so simple. Righteous law is so easy to understand. A six-year-old can understand it. It's obvious. But, you know, with our evil laws in America today and with how complex and horrific our system is, you have people devoting their entire lives to understanding the law. Not even the entire law, just this one super small subsection of the law. But so that is the first reason. But then B, these evil pro-murderer lawmakers want things to be vague and wordy because they know, hey, in 5 years when, you know, the pressure has died down all about this bill, we will have, you know, some pro-choice judges who want to make a ruling, and they can point to this bill and interpret it however they want. And you see, vagueness in so many areas is the enemy of the truth, right? When you discuss theology or morality or justice or politics or religion, and say you're arguing with somebody about one of those topics, a good sign that you are in the right is that you are being very straightforward and the people you're arguing with are very vague and wordy and they care about all these pointless semantics and they change the topic. And right, vagueness is so often not always, but often, the enemy of the truth. And I noticed that in a lot of the debates I've had with, you know, atheists and pro-aborts and, you know, people I disagree with on theology and religion and all these topics, I've noticed that so consistently the people I argue with are so vague and wishy-washy that it's like nailing Jell-O to a wall. It's so hard because they just jump all over the place. And it's always been frustrating to me. And I've noticed that when one of these people are right on a specific issue, say I'm talking to a Calvinist who I disagree with about, you know, theology. Say I'm talking to a Calvinist about abortion. On abortion, they will be very straightforward and blunt, and they won't dodge around the topic at all. But when you bring it to something that they're wrong about, they are so, you know, left and right, dodging, you know, arguments constantly. And to me, it seems so obvious. If you're dodging all these arguments, you should just rethink your position. But so, okay, I'm getting off topic. I don't mean to bash Calvinists here. That's not the point. Vagueness is so often, not always, but often, vagueness is so often the enemy of the truth. And now this bill, obviously, it is despicable. But we do have to remember that this bill is equally as despicable as all the murder that occurs every day. Murder of a baby who's been born for 5 days is equally as disgusting as the murder of a baby who is going to be born in 5 days from now. It's equally as disgusting as the murder of a baby who had just been conceived. And now, I'm not one to say that all sins are equal, but murdering some precious innocent boys and girls is just as sinful as murdering other precious innocent boys and girls, regardless of age. And I say this because there will be some people who see this and think, you know, oh, how egregious, I've got to fight this. And yeah, that's the correct thought to have. You should fight this. But then after you have that thought, continue thinking along those lines, think further, wow, if this is bad and I'm fighting that, all abortion is bad, so I'm going to fight all abortion. That's where your conclusion should bring you to. And the wicked, you see, it's not even, you see this bill and you think, how evil is this bill? And it's not even that they're becoming more wicked right now than they were before. At any point along this fight, had they had the ability, they would have proposed legislation like this. It's, you know, it's not that they are just now becoming this evil, but right now they think they have the ability to be this evil without it destroying them. Their evil, right, is limited only by their own power and their own creativeness to think of more evil things to do. There is no bottom to the abyss of wickedness. You see all these, you know, you always see these freaks on Twitter and they're dressing up in all black and tattooing themselves with satanic symbols. And I see people are literally dyeing their own eyes. They're taking dye and putting it in their eyes to make their eyes black. And they're saying, oh, my pronouns are demon/demon self. And it's not that they're now becoming that evil. Those people, they've been looking for a way to mock God for a long time now. And now they've just found another means of mocking him. So it's not, right, it's not that they're being any more evil with this bill. They've always been this evil. They're just finding a new creative way to be evil again. And so, you know, when we're done fighting this bill, fight more. And actually, in fact, this serves as a good reminder. It's time to fight some more. You know, very often it seems that with whatever spiritual warfare there is in America, the strategy of evil has been pretty much keep Christians comfortable and watching TV and Netflix. That way they don't do anything because they're having a good time. And that seems to have been the strategy for a while now, because so many Christians are content having a good time and not doing anything. And this should shock you, and you should realize that they're not going to draw the line anywhere. You know, if they can, if they have the strength, they will start, you know, rounding up Christians and killing them. That's not something that's beyond the realm of possibilities, right? You know, that's happened before in the past, and the people in the past haven't even done some of these horrifically evil things that these people are doing today. So it's not that it's, you know, their rigorous moral standards which are keeping them from doing that. It's a lack of power. So this should serve as a wake-up call to you. They hate the innocent. They want to destroy the innocent. But so what do we have to do? We have to stand up and we have to fight, and we have to go into enemy territory, and we have to attack. We have to attack the forces of evil. You know, Paul says the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church. And the gates of hell, it's interesting with your gates. You don't, right, when you're on the attack, you don't pack up your gates, march across the country to another castle, and plant your gates because you're attacking, right? No, gates are a defensive measure. You have your gates when you're using them on the defensive. And so Paul says the gates of hell shall not prevail. And that's implying that we're on the attack. We're going in to kill the sin and kill the wickedness. But, you know, sadly, right now, the church, we are on the defensive. We're not attacking. And we're just, you know, oh, please don't hurt me. Let me have a congregation. Let me get donations. But no, it's we're not supposed to be on the defensive. We are supposed to be on the offensive. So I'm going to start being on the offensive a bit more here with abortion. And I call you to join me in the attack against abortion. You know, sometimes I don't know what to do. And if you're in that situation, you want to fight against abortion, you want to do something, but you don't know what to do, a good starting place is you could get a sign and you could go to a street corner and you could hold it for an hour and then go home. Get a latte on the way home. It's not that confusing. Just get a sign and hold a sign. Make it a big sign. Give it big letters. Not too many words, because if it has too many words, people won't read it. Just get a sign and go to a street corner. And, you know, I did this when I didn't know what to do. I started doing that. And I said, well, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to hold this sign until I think of something better to do. And, you know, it's hard to think of something good to do. So I was holding that sign there for a while. And I decided that one of the best things I could do would be to hold that sign for a little longer. So I did that. So I encourage you to do more than you are right now to fight abortion. And that's it. That's a piece of advice I'm going to take myself, because I could be doing more to fight abortion. It is interesting when you look back and when you see the heroes of the past, you know, the Bonhoeffer types or the Corrie ten Boom types. So often what they say is I wish I would have done more. I wish I would have done more. And when you look at the more pathetic, you know, Christian churches that didn't really do anything in those times, they say, you know, oh, well, we did all we could. We tried. We did all we could. And then when you look at the people who actually were doing stuff, their attitude is always, I should have done more. We should be doing more. So have that attitude. Think to yourself, I should be doing more. And, you know, hey, history will remember you as a hero if you are constantly doing more, you're never doing enough. Because, you know, we have to be faithful to God. And beyond that, you know, remember that God doesn't always call us to win. A lot of the times he just calls us to be faithful. And so that's what we got to do here. Now, by the way, if you enjoy the show, either Bob Enyart Live, The Dominic Enyart Show, Theology Thursday, or Real Science Radio with Fred Williams on Fridays, consider reaching out and supporting us. Consider, you know, going to kegov.com/sponsor, signing up to become a sponsor, getting a product, you know, one of our We have a vast library of resources here at Bob and Yart Live. Go to the store, check out if there's anything you want to get. That'd be such an encouragement. Now, I do have some cool news here, and that was a lot of depressing news. So here's a little bit of good news to wrap things up. Elon Musk is now the largest shareholder of Twitter. And I'm on Twitter. You can follow me there, at Dominic and Yart. And I saw Elon Musk posted a poll on Twitter a few weeks back, and it read, quote, "Free speech is essential to a functioning democracy. Do you believe Twitter rigorously adheres to this principle, yes or no?" And then he made that as a poll so you could vote, and he commented on his own poll and stated, "The consequences of this poll will be important. Please vote carefully." And so I voted. Of course, Twitter doesn't care about free speech, and if you've been a fan of our shows here from KGov for a while, you'll know that we don't care much for democracy. It seems to be, you know, not the most biblical form of government, but nonetheless, it's clear that Twitter does not care about free speech. So I voted no. And after you vote, you get to see the results of the poll thus far. And this was a massive poll voted on by millions. And 30% said yes, and 70% said no. So that was cool, 70-30. And reading through the comments, you get the typical, you know, oh, but, you know, Twitter is a private company and they don't have to enforce the law, which is, from just a legal standpoint, is untrue for a variety of reasons. But even stepping away from the legal, whatever happened to having principles, right? Twitter should value freedom of speech, not because they're required to by law, but because they have a genuine desire to protect human rights, right? Putting aside any debate about legal obligation, you know, I'm talking about your moral responsibility. And Twitter isn't exempt from that just because they're Twitter. In fact, to quote Uncle Ben here, with great power comes great responsibility. So Twitter, they have a lot of power. And they don't have any less moral responsibility, but in fact, they have more responsibility. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of Christians about abortion, and I've urged them to join the fight against abortion. And you might be surprised to hear this, but Christians are some of the hardest people to get to join the fight. And if you don't believe me, by the way, you can go try it. Try going up to your Christian friends and say, hey, let's hold a sign against abortion once a month. And it'll be brutal when you see how difficult that is. Or go up to your pastor and encourage your pastor to fight more against abortion, and he will resist you. But Christians so often say, hey, I don't feel called to that ministry. That's not my responsibility. And well, first of all, yes, it is. Proverbs 24:11 commands us to rescue those who are being taken away to death, hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. But more so, what's more so, even if you are an unbeliever, you would still have a moral obligation, a responsibility to fight the murder of the innocent. And what I tell a lot of Christians like this, I say, hey, McDonald's, you know that place that makes the hamburgers? Yeah. This place, McDonald's, the fast food place that makes their food out of cardboard, yeah, them, they have an obligation to fight abortion. McDonald's has an obligation to fight abortion because everyone, everywhere, regardless of governmental law, has the moral obligation to fight what is sinful. And so here with Twitter has the moral obligation to uphold our right to freedom of speech. And so Twitter obviously is evil, doesn't care about freedom of speech. So I voted no. And now when I saw this, Musk afterward tweeted out that something had to be done. I was slightly skeptical that Musk was going to try and create his own new social media platform, which would have been okay, I guess. But we see so many Republican lookalike social media platforms, which are always really boring. You know, we've got Parler, which was taken off the App Store. And even before it was taken off, it was really boring because it was just a you know, conservative echo chamber, which, you know, echo chambers is fun for a little bit. Have your own opinions, you know, echoed back into your ear over and over. It's a little bit, you know, it feels nice for, you know, 30 minutes. But then it gets boring. And then, you know, we had Trump. Trump made his own Truth Social, which I haven't even used. It was a massive failure, essentially. Trump himself hardly uses the platform. And while Trump and the Parler CEO and all these other Republicans attempting to remake Twitter, it's a good idea in theory, but it's not good. And part of that is that only Republicans go there, so it gets stale. But also, you can't just beat Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. They're so big and they've been around for such a long time that they are very good at doing what they do. You know, their algorithms and their coding, it's so complex and purposeful. And it really does a great job doing what it wants to do. And you can't just start something up and beat it. It's just unrealistic. And so now what Musk is doing is pretty cool. There's been a meme going around for about a year now asking, can Elon Musk buy Twitter and then delete it? And that always made me laugh. But now Elon Musk, he's quasi actually doing that. It's cool. He bought 9.2% of Twitter. I believe it cost him about $3 billion. And, you know, the former CEO, Jack Dorsey, was previously, I believe, the biggest shareholder with, I think, 2.5% of all the shares. Now, Elon Musk has 9.2% of Twitter. And he's been put on the board of Twitter. And so, you know, it's pretty cool. Amid all the horrible news of today's day and age, this could be a positive. We'll have to wait and see what he has in store for Twitter. And before we get ahead of ourselves, before we start celebrating, Musk is far from a conservative Christian role model. So try and make a point not to idolize him as many Republicans do. You know, he likes the Babylon Bee. I think that's the closest to God he gets. So this is pretty cool. And Musk, Elon Musk, I do pray for him. He's not, you know, a Christian, and he has some pretty weird beliefs about artificial intelligence and the, you know, aliens and whatnot. So he is a little weird, but he does cool things. You know, he wanted to build an electric car. So he built an electric car, and then he made that competitive in the market. And then he decided he wanted to build a space force. So he built a space force. And then he took one of his electric cars and one of his rockets, and he put the electric car on the rocket and then launched his own electric car into outer space because he thought it was cool. And now that's something, you know, that's a cool person right there. That's the type of person I want to share heaven with. So rather than just pretending like he's the greatest person alive, I pray for him and I would warn him that he needs to, you know, repent and turn to God and put his trust in his Savior. And I pray that you guys also make a point not to idolize him, to recognize the cool stuff he's done, but don't idolize him. Pray for him. And hey, that's going to about do it for me here today. Check out KGOV.com for other shows from KGOV. And hey, may God bless you guys.